Yep. Good morning, Pensacola. It's Tuesday, January 31st, the last day of January. 11 months to go before we go to 2024. We've got a lot of great guests today. I'm Rick Outzen. I've got Cena Madison working the board. Walker Wilson is at Cape Town, South Africa. On another adventure, excursion of Walker Wilson helping a buddy, not with a wedding this time, but apparently a bucket list item. So we'll have Walker tell us about. We may call him.
Yeah, I don't know what the time.
We'll give him a call. Today's going to be a legal day, just in the beginning. The Humane Society, on behalf of its board, has filed a lawsuit against its workers that resigned and the former executive director, alleging defamation and interference with business relationships. It claims that former employees intentionally and or recklessly published information that resulted in significant financial injury to the Humane Society, its goodwill, and its reputation. They're seeking in excess of $30,000 in damages from these six employees, which probably maybe combined made less than $30,000. In any particular month of any particular paycheck, if you put them all together, a temporary injunction that, if granted, would require the former employees to issue a public apology and publish a retraction of false statements it alleged made against the Humane Society and the board. We're still waiting for the audit that was supposed to be done. That was the first board's reaction was. Remember, they haven't interviewed with us. We made several requests. Jeremy Morrison had several times interviews were set up, and they backed out at the last minute. They said they hired an accounting firm, Saltmarsh, Cleveland, and Gunn, to investigate and resolve financial concerns. We don't know what that's still not ready, according to the News Journal. They also hired an attorney out of Tallahassee, who was going to try to help smooth things over with the staff. Nobody on the staff would talk to her. Just as the board would not talk to us officially and in weekly, they weren't going to talk to an attorney hired by the board. This is going to be interesting to watch. Let's see how this unfolds. We've asked for a copy of the lawsuit. We should have it pretty soon. I'll publish it today once we get it. We'll see how this one plays out, because there are a lot of bits and pieces that don't add up here. So we'll see how it goes. The other lawsuit that's out there, Donald Trump has filed a lawsuit in Pensacola against Bob Woodward and Simon & Schuster and Paramount, the parent company of Simon & Schuster, over the audiobook that Woodward did publish back in, I guess, 2020? But it was the book, Rage.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, Trump came out and said, I never said this. It was taken out of context. So Woodward did publish the audio tapes of all the interviews, which pretty much showed that he said what was in the book. The lawsuit is looking for, you know, millions of dollars from Woodward. And what Donald Trump is saying in this, the former president, is that he gave permission to tape the interviews for a book, but not for audio tapes. And Simon & Schuster and Woodward have come back and said, you signed a release. You know, we did exactly what we said we were going to do. You know, this is
sort of like the Rick Astley, he didn't agree to the use of voice.
Right. So this will play out. It's interesting that it's been filed here in Pensacola, of all the places to be filed. You know, and I think part of that is the appellate court coming out of here is also very conservative. So, and maybe, I don't know how many Trump appointees are along the way here that he may think gives him a special ability to do this. So we'll see how it plays out. But it was filed yesterday. The and I've asked for a copy of this too, so hopefully we'll be able to get it. It is, so we've got a legal day here, starting with Humane Society going after its poor volunteers and former staff members because they said bad things about them, and they handled it so poorly. The board of directors and the Humane Society board handled this whole thing so badly, but now they're going after these people who don't have a whole lot of money, and we'll see how this plays out. I'm not sure they get as much sympathy as they see themselves as the injured party. My take on this is the public doesn't see them as victims, but we'll see how this plays out. Hopefully it'll go to court. It'll go to trial. Hopefully they'll release the audit. I would love, you know, we've asked them to open up the books and let us look at the books ourselves. You've got a lot of people that have made donations to the Humane Society who have asked for an accounting of it. I don't know if they ever received their accounting of it. So we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. Again, this is something that it started in December, and now they filed a lawsuit. Donald Trump and Bob Woodward will be interesting to see how that one plays out in the court system. It's all about the audio books, which in the essence, Trump said he didn't say it, and the tape said he did. So we'll see how that goes. The other big story we're going to have, it was Johnson & Johnson, which is the baby powder lawsuit, big lawsuit over the years. We're going to have Cameron Stevenson come on and talk about it. It was a huge case that was out there yesterday. Johnson & Johnson was trying to get out of the penalties, or get out of the paying off this class action lawsuit by filing bankruptcy. It didn't work. And to give us the information on it, we've got Levin Papantonio, Rafferty attorney, Cameron Stevenson on. Cameron, thank you for coming on this morning.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, Rick. How you doing this morning?
Fine. Former In Weekly Rising star. Good to have you on. Got to always plug
for sure,
that.
For sure, for sure. I'm looking at that award right now.
That's it. All right, tell us what happened with this, you know, the judge's ruling.
So I'll tell you, you know, honestly, I could talk to you, Rick, for about an hour, but I'll try to give you the nutshell version about this. There were about, to date, about 40,000 women with ovarian cancer. And this is a latent disease, and who knows how many there's going to be in the future. But essentially, you know, when a lot of these women started having hysterectomies and having pathology done of their ovarian tissues, the pathologist noticed specifically identifiable asbestos that's traced to certain talcum powder mines, not only in our country, but throughout the world. So essentially, you know, over the last, I would say, 7 or 8 years, there was a big class action that developed against Johnson & Johnson, and they actually pulled baby powder from the market with talcum powder because of the FDA finding asbestos in it. So, you know, you can still buy baby powder with cornstarch as an alternative, but they pulled talcum powder, baby powder, from the market because of asbestos. And, you know, Johnson & Johnson started getting very substantial verdicts against them. And seeing this weighing issue, what they did was they utilized this Texas law where you can essentially separate a subsidiary into two companies, the bad company with the liability, and then all the while the good company subsumes all of the good products that it wants to continue, whether it's Band-Aid or whatever.
Right.
And so they filed this sham corporation that has no legitimate business purpose. 2 days after it was created, where they funneled off through a series of contractual agreements all of this talc liability, they filed it for bankruptcy. And all it was a litigation tactic to try to prevent from having to compensate, you know, all of these women. And they would have eventually probably had to pay pennies on the dollar if the case stayed in bankruptcy. But fortunately, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals said, you know, look, bankruptcy is for honest companies that are having solvency issues so that creditors can be compensated with what's remaining. Well, you know, everybody knows Johnson & Johnson is one of the biggest corporations in the world. They're right. A $500 billion company. And, you know, the bankruptcy court just said, look, we are not going to allow this perverse abuse of the bankruptcy system. This is not what it was intended for, and y'all need to go back to the tort system. And so here we are, and we're putting the brakes on, or putting the gas pedal on the litigation once again.
You know, this, we got Cameron Stevenson in he is in Weekly Rising Star, but in his day job, he's an attorney for Levin Papantonio Rafferty. You know, Cameron, we've seen this before. We saw it with Big Tobacco, where they tried to sell off some of their brands, some of the big tobacco companies, and then say, well, you know, we don't have, you know, the new company that bought the brands said, well, that we didn't sign this agreement, and then the other, you know, they've tried it there. I think we've seen Monsanto try to do something similar, that these spinoffs is been sort of a we've seen it in more of these mass torts cases lately, haven't we?
We have, and it's really, you know, hopefully the tide is turning and it'll be able to stop. But I'll tell you another good example is right in our backyard, the environmental case that Mike Papantonio and Troy handled. With Bayou Sahar and the pollution over years and years of different landowners of that company and one after another trying to sell it off and get rid of the liability, and it didn't happen, and we got a great recovery for this community.
Yeah, that's right. That was Agrigo Chemical. It was sold off to ConocoPhillips. You're right. I forgot. That was a $70 million settlement in that process. But you're right. I forgot about that one. That was another one where they by selling it off or spinning off certain parts, the bad parts, like you said, it was an attempt to try to get out of it. So where are we with Johnson & Johnson now? You said you're going to put the, you know, are there, do y'all have more lawsuits that y'all are dealing with around the country?
Yeah, you know, so we've got most of these cases are filed in New Jersey and consolidated in front of a federal judge in New Jersey. There's a couple of state court litigations. But essentially, when J&J filed their talc subsidiary for bankruptcy, everything across the country in all jurisdictions was stayed, which, you know, basically means you just can't move forward. But now that the bankruptcy has been dismissed, hopefully sooner rather than later, we will get to, you know, all of the litigations across the country will be back in active status. It's unclear to me at this point. Johnson & Johnson has a couple of avenues, candidly. They can try to appeal this to the United States Supreme Court, which I am pretty certain they would not grant cert. But they will do everything they can to stay this as long as they can. But, you know, we will get back to the tort system. It's just a matter of time.
And how much money – I know y'all have gone through the discovery process – how much money did Johnson & Johnson make? That's the other piece in these big suits like this, is they're crying foul when they've got to pay billions of dollars, but that's just a fraction of how much money they made off of baby powder, isn't it?
It is, and they have made some – I mean, this product is – and it's not even about the money with them. This product is the number one product that represents the wholesome brand of Johnson & Johnson, and be damned if they're ever going to admit anything was wrong with it until they absolutely have to. But to give you a point of context, Johnson & Johnson's stock after this announcement came down yesterday went down 3.5%, and I want to say that was about $15 billion of their market cap. Quite candidly, they're getting nowhere to offering these victims anything close to that amount right now.
Wow. Cameron, thank you for the work you're doing. Thank you for coming on today. I think that this is good news for the little guy once again.
I appreciate it, Rick, and thank you for what you do. Hope you have a good rest of your day, man.
All right, you too. Take care. All right, we'll go ahead and break. We'll pay a few bills and maybe buy us a new microphone for the office. Huh? Okay, we'll do it. We're Real News with Rick Outzen. With We're Real News with Rick Outzen of WCOA.
It's January 31st. Happy birthday, Justin Timberlake. He's 42. He was born in Memphis, Tennessee.
I didn't realize that. The barbecue town. All right. There's something going on at the Dallas Zoo. Animals keep escaping. Jim Ryan's in Dallas. You have to be careful, I guess, every day you go out. There could be another animal gone.
Well, potentially, yes. And the first time this happened early this month, Rick, you'll remember we were talking about it, a leopard got loose after its enclosure was cut open. And this was it's not, you think leopard, you think this thing prowling around hunting people. It's a little bigger than a house cat, but it's a rare and leopard that got loose. It was found about 7 hours later, and it was okay, put back in its enclosure without any harm. But at the same time that day, zookeepers found that a different enclosure, a primate enclosure, had been cut open. The monkeys that lived inside there didn't go anywhere. They stayed right where they were. Then last week, you had a vulture at the zoo, a 33-year-old endangered vulture killed in its cage. Somebody wounded it. I mean, the investigators haven't said how, but they say there was a suspicious wound to the vulture that killed it. So this is getting very serious. And now yesterday, we heard about a pair of monkeys. These are emperor tamarin monkeys, beautiful little creature with big white mustache and a red tail that are missing from the zoo. Somebody cut open the enclosure there and apparently took the animals. The primate specialists say that these two monkeys would not have gone anywhere on their own. They wouldn't have, even if somebody had cut open the enclosure, they wouldn't have left. They want to stay right there inside their habitat. Well, somebody apparently took those two animals and they're gone. So this is only getting deeper. Nobody's quite sure, Rick, what's happening, whether these cases are connected. I think that it stands to reason that they would
right,
be.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's at this point just a mystery. Dallas police have been brought in. They haven't said much at all about what they've learned.
Has there been any move for the Dallas Zoo to increase its security? I know this seems something that the zoo doesn't really worry about as much, but now with these incidences, they've got
to be looking. Well, absolutely. There is security all over that zoo. It's a pretty large zoo. It's 109 acres, I believe. It's one of the bigger in the country. And there are calls to increase security, to put up more cameras. I suspect that some video has been captured, but the police haven't shared what it is, as have they held on to the information about how that vulture was killed. They want to try to limit that information to the person who did it and to the investigators who know about it. It's a pretty common investigative technique. So, you're right. The zoo has been – they're furious about this. They're worried about it. And, they're taking steps to try to increase security.
Jim, I know you have to cover a lot of different types of news stories. And you're also keeping up with the Tyre Nichols death. What are some of the latest developments there?
Well, yes. We now know that 10 first responders – have either been relieved of duty, have been terminated, or charged, or a combination of those. The five police officers who were initially terminated, those who were seen in the video beating Tyre Nichols on the night of January 7th, have, of course, they've been charged and they've bonded out of jail. But now we have a couple of paramedics, Robert Long and LaMichael Sandridge, who have been fired, along with the fire department truck driver who took them out to that scene. And this presumably because of the long delay in getting Tyre Nichols to the hospital. There was something like 22 minutes between the time they arrived and the time they finally loaded him onto a stretcher and got him to the hospital. He died 3 days later of his injuries. But you also have another police officer who was at the initial scene. You remember, Rick, that the beating happened after an initial traffic stop, right. The police ostensibly pulling over the car because of reckless driving. They tried to get Tyre Nichols out of the car. They got him on the ground. He stood up and managed to run. Police caught him several blocks away, very close to Tyre Nichols' mother's house. That's why he was yelling mom when the police were beating him. But one officer who was at that initial scene also has been relieved of duty, not fired, but relieved of duty. And he's the one who's heard in the video saying, "I hope they stomp his blank when they catch him." So, what's more, the district attorney there in Shelby County says there could be further criminal charges brought against some of these folks or others, Rick.
Yeah, and what's frightening about this, Jim, is it was captured on camera, and we thought that having body cams and having more eyes on these incidences that would curb them, or that officers would be aware that this was being recorded. It didn't make a difference here, which is a little disturbing.
Well, it didn't seem to, right. Or the officers felt they weren't doing anything wrong. You know, their attorneys, all five of them have attorneys now, and the attorneys have said, look, our clients are innocent until they're proven guilty. They didn't want Tyre Nichols to die that night. I think they might have thought, Rick, that what they were doing was within the law. Well, the police chief She took a look at it and immediately said this was not within the our standards. Right. This was not legal. A grand jury looked at it. Prosecutors filed charges. And so, yeah, you're right. You would think that wearing a body camera and knowing that there was that pole-mounted camera right looking at them might have dissuaded their actions. Well, it just didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll stay on top of it. Jim, thank you so much for coming on this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, take care. You know, the Tyre Nichols death is one that is resonating through a lot of the communities around the country. You know, for us, you look at body cams, you cameras, we think that's going to make a difference. In this instance, it didn't. I did see where there is a new AI, artificial intelligence, where they are able to download body cams of officers, just their day-to-day body cams. And they can do a quick analysis and see if they see any patterns, hear any kind of red flag type conversations that deputies or police officers are having, and send that to their supervisors. So it's a way to maybe...
That's a way to do risk management.
Right, yes, yeah. Right. So that is a possibility that's out there. It's brand new technology. It's being used on the West Coast. But that might be something that gives a proactive sense. So, okay, we've got an officer that may be under a lot of stress, or you know, the conversations are such. We'll see how this develops. But the body cams didn't quite do the job that we thought it would in here.
It's very similar of the AI we were talking about that you could have on your phone that might show you when you're about to come down with something because you're slow, you're under stress, you're more likely to get sick. I mean. Lots of stuff can be used like that.
Could be. Mm-hmm. All right. We got Stacey Knowles in the studio. What's happening locally, Stacey?
Hey, thank you very much, Rick. And, yeah, here's what's happening in our local and our state headlines. Well, in recent years, the popular video app TikTok has been criticized by many, and one person who shares in that criticism is Florida Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patronis. Well, Patronis is recommending the app be blocked from all public universities in the state because he feels the app could be causing a rise in violence due to some of its violent content. Well, several state lawmakers say banning the app at colleges and universities may be something that they will consider this spring. The Pensacola Police Department is continuing their investigation after a body was discovered off Scenic Highway over the weekend. Investigators say the man was found on the side of the road around 9 a.m. Sunday morning, and it did not appear he was involved in a hit and run nor involved in any type of traffic fatality. Well, they originally thought the case was suspicious, but now believe it to be a suicide. The Pensacola Police Department will release more information as it becomes available. Santa Rosa County Sheriff's deputies say they've arrested a Pace man and charged him with animal cruelty after they say a dog was found dead in a kennel and others found severely malnourished. 42-year-old Anthony Hopkins was taken into custody over the weekend and is facing 5 counts of animal cruelty. Deputies say their initial investigation at Hopkins' property was for a theft of services complaint, and that's when the dogs were discovered. Investigators say they are also looking for another suspect in connection with this case, 30-year-old Haley Nicole Lynn Williams. Williams is also facing the same 5 counts as Hopkins. If you have any information on the whereabouts of Haley Nicole Lynn Williams, you're advised to contact the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Department. A Pensacola contractor currently charged with taking money and either not finishing jobs or never starting them to begin with is now facing even more legal issues this week. On Monday, a state agency filed a complaint against Jerry Lacoste. It's unclear if the details of the administrative complaint filed against the department or filed by the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, rather, but the complaint was filed less than a week after Lacoste's most recent arrest. He, of course, is facing over 20 counts of fraud and larceny in both Escambia and Santa Rosa counties. Lacoste is expected back in court in Santa Rosa County this week, but it's unclear of his next court appearance in Escambia County. And, Rick, you know, kind of like the dentist, I think this is one we're going to be hearing about for quite a while.
I think so. Yeah. We saw this building. Actually, it's been building over the last couple of years with her coming out of Hurricane Sally. The story started to really pile up this summer, and it is – I think for a lot of homeowners that were taken in these type of instances, it's been way too slow, and I think tens of thousands of dollars have been lost for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, over the years, Escambia County has seen its fair share of cold cases or cases that have never been solved. Well, in March, the Escambia County Sheriff's Department is planning to hold a cold case symposium, which will focus on four cold case homicides. Current and retired detectives, retired certified law enforcement officers, current investigators, and Sheriff Chip Simmons will all be participating in the two-day event. The symposium is scheduled for March 15th and 16th, and any retired law enforcement who would like to participate can contact Colonel David Ingram at the Escambia County Sheriff's Department. So that should be pretty interesting. I know a lot of those cases still waiting for answers. And like Sheriff Chip Simmons said, I mean, just because they've never been solved doesn't mean that they've forgotten about them.
That's right. Maybe every participant will get a black hat to wear. All right, let's go ahead. We'll go ahead and break for commercials. We're Real News with Rick Outson. We'll be right back.
When I was a little boy, at the age of 5, I had something in my pocket.
Welcome back. We're Real News with Rick Outson on WCOA.
It's January the 31st. On this day, back in 1979, Bo Diddley opened up for The Clash at the beginning of their U.S. tour.
I liked when groups did that, where they brought in some of the old blues musicians as part of their show.
The Rolling Stones always did.
Yeah, right. It's so cool. Foo Foo Fest is getting ready to kick off next Monday. This will be the 10th annual year of it. To give us the lowdown and sort of preview next week's meeting, as well as review the success of 2022, we've got another In Weekly Rising star, Therese McKenzione. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you for having me.
Good. We needed you to be a rising star much earlier than Alistair, but Alistair said he had to be the first. I know. I'm sorry about that, but we got the best one of the McKenzie house.
All right.
Listen, Foo Foo Fest this last year was a huge success, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was the most successful so far.
Yeah, the events really, I think excited a lot of people. The Bubble Alley went very well. The performances were cool. Y'all did a much more diverse crowd this year, I think, in the type of events, big and small. So you've got a lot to live up to as chairman coming in this next year.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And as you know, Maria Goldberg has been the chairperson for the past few years, and she has done such a fabulous job with this festival. So I know I definitely have some big shoes to fill.
So what will happen next week at the kickoff meeting?
What's going to happen next week at the kickoff is that we invite all of the local nonprofit art organization and also local businesses to come and learn about Foo Foo Fest 2023. As you mentioned earlier, this is going to be our 10th annual Foo Foo Fest. So we've got a lot of special things going on this year that we are planning. Can't share them with you right now, but we will share that news at the kickoff event. So the kickoff event is happening this upcoming Monday, February 6th at 10:30 a.m. at Palafox House downtown. And what we do is that we inform the public what Foo Foo Fest is all about. And then we also review the grant application process, kind of what are the rules in order to be eligible to apply for a grant, what are the applicable deadlines that are going to apply this year. And then also we do a pretty detailed review on the scoring process. Because what we do as the Foo Foo Fest committee is that we receive all these grant applications to put on a special event during Foo Foo Festival, and we try to curate a diverse festival that is going to hopefully bring visitors to the city during the time of the festival. So at the meeting on Monday, we're going to go through the scorecard and kind of walk the potential grant applicants through kind of like what it is that we're looking for as a committee for this upcoming year.
For our listeners, if you're new to the area, Foo Foo Fest is an annual celebration of arts and cultural events. It happens this next year. It'll start November 2nd and go through November 13th. The Great Gulf Coast Arts Festival is a part of it. the opera, the symphony. I mean, all sorts of things are going on in that 13 or 12 day period. The other thing that y'all do that I think is really cool is you have Friends of Fufu, where organizations may not be asking for a grant, but they still want to participate and be supportive of Fufu Fest. So they try to do their own events on a smaller scale, but take advantage of having so many tourists and visitors in the area for that 12-day period.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. So anybody can apply to become a friend of Fufu. So if you are a restaurant, a bar owner or anything, and you're doing a special event during the festival, you can apply to become a friend of Fu, and we will add you to our website, and we will promote your event for you, and it's absolutely free.
Right. You know, and there are a lot of people that do it as friends of Fu, and the value of being on y'all's website is huge, because that's where everybody goes there, that and then weekly. That that's where everybody goes to catch up with what's going on all those 12 days. And it is, you know, I think this was a brainchild of David Baer and Maria Goldberg 10 years ago. And it's phenomenal how it's grown. And
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It was David's idea, and he took it to Maria and said, "Hey, I've got this idea." And Maria said, "Super cool. Let's do it." And look at it now, yeah. 10 years later, and it's growing bigger and bigger every year.
It is. Therese, thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care. Pensacola Fufu Fest. This is the kickoff meeting. It'll be next Monday, 10:30 to noon at Paula Fox House. 196 North Paula Fox Street. It's right close to where Pensacola Hardware is, right there on the corner on Paula Fox right there. So if you want to look for it, right next to Soleil Inn. So you get an idea where to go. All right, we'll go ahead and break. We'll give you the news, weather, and traffic. We'll be right back. Real News with Rick Outson. Thank you for joining us. Your Real News with Rick Outson this Friday. We're going to be celebrating the 97th anniversary of when WCOA started. The first show was broadcast February 3rd, 1926. So it should be a special show. We'll see how we'll put that together. Southwest, we know they had this huge meltdown in December. They've done a lot to try to deal with it. They think that right now they're reporting that this costs them about $800 million. And it's in lost revenue. Of course, that's when the snow and the ice hit them, and they have a system where they don't have a lot of hubs. So planes, if one part of the leg of a flight gets delayed, then everyone down the line also gets delayed. The stories or horror stories of people that didn't make it home for the holidays because they were flying Southwest. They think it's still going to be about another $300 to $350 million bottom line hit right now to them in this next quarter, too. It'll take a while to climb out of it. The Impact 100, they're doing another meet and mingle today. They're doing one every week through the month of February. And the goal is to get as many members as they can. The membership is $1,000. The reason the more members they get, the more grants and the larger grants they can give. They've given away, you know, they now have over 1,000 members. They're doing $100,000 grants, $1 million a year they're giving away. The meet and mingles are an opportunity for you to get to meet the members, understand how the process works, see if you'd like to be a part of it. Today, they're going to meet, well, right now, they're meeting right now, 8 to 9:30 at Scenic Hills Country Club. So if you were heading that way, hurry up. You're about 4 minutes late. They'll do it again next week. It'll be at the Floribama, and then they're going to Stonebrook Golf Club the following week, Pensacola Museum of Art the next week, and then the Pensacola Country Club. So they're moving all over the two-county area, different times a day to try to recruit as many people as they can. So please think about that as an opportunity, as something to get involved in. The we looked at right now we're having a record month for podcast. You can go online to inweekly.net or ricksblog.biz and click on the podcast button on the side, and you'll be able to see it. The number one topic this past month, which is no surprise, has been the Sacred, the movie. People have listened to all the different interviews that we've had over the last couple months with it. Almost 1,500 listens on Sacred, all the Sacred podcasts. The next big subject was Matt Gaetz. I talk about what he did in the fight over the Speaker of the House, the analysis, people defending him, people seeing, questioning it. That was around 900 listeners and downloads to that. The other one that's kind of sweet in all this mix of what people listened to was the Celestine Bed and Breakfast, which
that's
was a really nice story. It's a new bed and breakfast downtown. It is an Airbnb. It is in an old family home that they bought the family home that their great-grandmother had and refurbished it. And it is a really cool little sweet story. But they really, people wanted to hear that as much as they could. The other thing we talked about a little bit yesterday was government and God and Government Award. Chip Simmons got it over the weekend. I went and looked and see who got this award in the past. Now, it was a 46th year, and I went through the archives of the News Journal, and not every year did they do an article on who got it. You know, I mean, they advertised for it and promoted it, but so not every year. But here's just a partial list. Sheriffs David Morgan and Ron McNesby got it, so it's not unusual for a sheriff to get it. Congressman Earl Hutto, Joe Scarborough, and Jeff Miller. Matt Gaetz on that list. State reps, Dave Merzen, Holly Benson, Buzz Ritchie, Ray Sansom. Judges, Lacey Collier, Ken Bell, Bill White. Tax collectors, Matt Langley Bell III, Janet Holly. Supervisors of election, Bonnie Jones and David Stafford. Mayors, John Fogg of Pensacola, Freddie McCall of Century, and R.L. Lewis in Milton. Over at Mobile has so much history. And I'm going to change subjects real quick, but Mobile has so much history. One of it is that the last slave ship that we know about came into the Mobile Bay. It was Clotilda. They have done a documentary on it. There's also a play that's going to be debuting. And we've got the director and author of the play. It's Terrence Spivey on now. Good morning, Terrence.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, guys. Hi.
This is such an interesting part of our history as a region and a country, but also of Mobile, because for a while, no one knew where that ship was. It took a while to find it.
Yes. Let me just go back a bit. I mean, in terms of the ship itself, I knew of the Clotilde. I knew of the name
right
years ago. I didn't know the extension of it connected to Mobile. You know, I knew it much just like the Amistad. And of course, when Miss Jocelyn Davis, who was the descendant Clotilde's Association's one of the main, she's one of the main stars in Descendant. She reached out to me 2.5 years ago and said, hey, you know, there are books out there about our ancestors. There's a movie coming out. We need to have our own voices of our ancestors. We would love for you to, you know, they commissioned me to write and direct the piece. And this is the second time around. We did it 2022 in February. And it's a lot more enhanced, a lot more layers I've added. And I've also added more warriors, the homie warriors, in the piece. But it's an amazing, compelling, unfortunate story,
right,
but it's still fascinating at the same time, knowing that these people, you know, these descendants know their ancestors very specifically, their names.
Yeah, it's important that we know the citizens of Africatown and their history. Could you tell the story of Clotilde for somebody out there that may not know it, just a short version of it?
Yeah, Scotilla was the last illegal slave ship. It arrived here in Mobile here in 1860. It was a schooner. It's a good speed. It's very fast. A gentleman, a ship magnate here in Mobile named Timothy Mayer, made a bet that he could get the ship from Dahomey, West Africa, to Mobile without getting caught. Because at the time, it was illegal. In 1807, it was prohibited to bring any Africans from across the waters, transatlantic, to America. And that's we're talking about later on, 1860. And then they burned the ship, which made it even more intriguing. They burned it to hide evidence, and it sunk down into the Mobile Bay. William Foster, who's the ship captain, was the one that was sent over, traded with gold with King Glele of Dahomey. And they got the 110 enslaved Africans and put them on the ship. And the boat was the ship was discovered in 2019, and it's very intriguing. I when I first spoke with Jocelyn Davis, she sent me like a amazing 11-minute interview with her and a couple of other descendants and Anderson Cooper. They were on 60 Minutes about the whole thing of how do you feel knowing this ship was discovered. It was considered a myth.
Right.
Over the years, people kept saying it's not true, it's not true. And the ship actually even came above, close up to the surface of water like in the 1960s. And they put dynamite to it to take it back down.
Wow.
But it came back up to surface again, a little bit of it. Mr. Ben Raines. Ben Raines is the author of The Last Slave Ship. He happened to go into the waters like in 2018 and didn't find the whole ship, but he also created a trail for National Geographic to go further down, and that's where they found it in 2019, the ship itself.
I did not know that about them putting it back down in the 60s. And I tell you what, the Meyer family is still in Mobile. In fact, the state park on the causeway is Meyer State Park.
Yes. Yes, they interesting though, they have they finally come out from being silent for years. They were like as quiet as the late Marcel Marceau for a while. they were very you couldn't even get them to get any quotes in any books, and definitely Margaret Brown, the wonderful director for Descendant, couldn't even get them in the movie. But they finally opened up and broke their silence with the CDA, Clotilda Descendant Association, about a couple of months ago. They actually, from reading the books and talking to other scholars, they were one of the major ones that would point a different direction on where the boat, where the ship could be, have sank and have sunk. Found out that it was actually a thousand feet away from where they live.
Listen,
across the waters.
For our listeners, this is Terrence Spivey. He is the writer and director. The play is An Ocean in My Bones.
Yes.
It'll be this weekend at the Spirit of Our Ancestors Festival in Africatown. It's going to be Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Mobile County Training Center. I'll get this information up. What was it like to work on this? I mean, this is such a piece of history that's been unknown for a while. It had to be an emotional thing for you.
It was, Bob. Good question. It definitely was very emotional. When I first started working on it over two years ago, when Jocelyn and CDA reached out to me, very emotional, very spiritual. I was able to also interview the descendants in addition to reading the books. I was at the time on the campus of Allegheny College in Pittsburgh. They had me there I was teaching like a 2-month of black theater history there. And it was so much going on doing that. that had Zooms with some of the descendants. Interesting, though, some of them preferred not to be seen. They wanted to talk on the phone only. Mm. And so I explained the reason why it was so important for me, since there was no video, no film of the ancestors. We had that whole thing called blood memory, and that whole thing that the great August Wilson used to talk about in his plays, that line of nuances, movement, how you sound. I said, okay, the best way to bring these ancestors to life is to also watch their descendants when I'm talking, their nuances, their behaviors. And I made sure I put that in script for the actors to be able to convey that. So so they could be able to say, oh, my God, look at this. You know, so it was really inspiring. And yes, it was emotional. It became artistic. It used to be the first thing on the list when I talk about something. It ended up being the last in terms of working on the project. It was very personal and historical, spiritual. And I told the actors, it's one of the few plays I've directed. I mean, I programmed over 70 plays at Caramel House and directed close to half. And I used to step back and just know, okay, I directed this play. But I told them, I said, I am not the guiding person on this. It's the spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the actors, because they're amazing, wonderful actors. Some not as skilled or trained, but the emotion, you know, the content within them carried them through the first time we did it. And I said, I'm not directing this play. You all are collaboratively helping me to make this piece happen. And to put it and to direct it in Mobile County Training School.
Right.
I mean, that's the school that the ancestors founded in 1880. They founded that school. And what – I mean, I couldn't – friends of mine live in New York. They would say, oh, my God, I would just leave Broadway just to perform one time in that school, you know, because it's ancestral ground,
right,
you know?
Right.
So I've been very blessed and fortunate. And CDA, I thank them, and Jocelyn Davis and Pat Frazier and all of them for bringing me aboard. This is where, as that old saying, you know, that I went to Prairie View A&M. I got a BA degree there. And my great mentor, Clarence Lee Turner, used to tell us how close art is, so spiritual, how it's to the Bible. There's the altar, and there's a congregation, which is the audience, and there's a testimony.
Wow.
And this here really hit me here with this play, An Ocean in My Bones, in terms of that.
Great. Terrence, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for sharing the story
thank
with
you.
Our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, too.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
An Ocean in My Bones. It's February 4th and 5th, 2 p.m. It is our Spirit of Our Ancestors Festival. It's at the Mobile County Training School. I'll get all this information up on the blog, but this was a great interview. Seen a good job in connecting this. Let's go ahead and we'll break. We'll be right back. We're Real News with Rick Outson. We're Real News with Rick Outson.
Spotify's launched a new playlist to amplify the voices of Iranian women who for the last 4 months have led the fight towards human rights in Iran. It's called Women of Iran, and it features people like here Shervin Hajipour, who was both arrested and imprisoned for sharing music in support of the movement. I went through it. It's all pretty much down. This is the most upbeat I could find.
Oh.
It's all a little bit sad, but...
Listen, today, don't be surprised this morning if you try to get on one of the county websites and it doesn't come up. Right now, they're all working, but they're doing work, doing an internet upgrade, and they suspect that some of their websites, like My Escambia and the library's website and the ECAT website, that those are going to be down at least some for an hour and a half, sometime between 8 and 11 o'clock. Right now, I've just checked all of them. They're up, but it'll be down for a little while today.
You ready for Puppy Bowl?
Always.
Puppy Bowl 19. It's coming up. I checked it out. Team Fluff, Team Ruff. The Aussie is called Chicky Tinker. Chicky Tinker. And he's on Team Fluff. That's 1 o'clock on the 12th.
And all the cats will be, at Badlands smoking and drinking wine. The only wine bar will let them go there, and they will not be happy.
Complaining about the wine.
They will be. A section of South Jefferson Street is going to be near Plaza de Luna is going to be closed while they do some work there. They started it yesterday. Hopefully sometime today they'll knock that out.
The average age of a first-time mom in the United States climbed about 27 years, marking a record high in 2021, according to a new CDC report. While decisions around having children largely depend on personal circumstances, the COVID-19 pandemic probably had a lot to do with the age rising.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is, we saved lives, you know, during the COVID, by trying to isolate people or at least separate, you know, trying to stop the spread of it. But we're finding, you know, the other consequences were out there, weren't as noticeable at the time, you know, people were dealing with.
We'll be seeing psychological roll off from it for a while.
We will, and we see it in the kids as far as learning.
Yeah.
You know.
Overall, food prices may be up by 11.8%, but football fans aren't going to be feeling it so much. If you plan on making chicken wings for your party, you're going to spend 22 cents less than you did last year, according to the Wells Fargo Super Bowl food report. The chicken wings have dropped, plus the price of avocado, which was really, really high there for a while, has dropped 20%. Shrimp is down 17%, and sirloin steak has decreased $1 per pound.
All right. Now I know what my menu is going to be. Truist Foundation, the bank, they have the Community Enterprise Investments Group here, got a $150,000 grant to set up it's going to be for people of color and impact fund to help provide capital in loans to small businesses, entrepreneurs, startups by, you know, black and brown entrepreneurs in our area. I've got all this information up on the blog, but this is a big deal, and for Truist to step up, Tom Owens and his group to do this, I think it's amazing. But that story's up there, and I got it up yesterday.
And we could have called Walker Wilson because it's 3 o'clock. Well, it's 4 o'clock now in Cape Town, South Africa.
Well, he's hitting happy hour. We probably ought to do it.
Probably interrupt. Probably ought to do it right at the start of the show tomorrow. That would be the way to do it. And you know, I didn't really finish because the food is down. But, you know, you're going to spend it on beer. Beer is up 11% higher than it was last year, Super Bowl time.
Then it all offsets each other. So, because if you can't have beer, you can't watch the game.
No.
Unless you're
a cat. It's
illegal.
Unless you're a cat at Badlands.
And that's right. All right, we've done enough damage today. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll have Stacey Knowles come in with some highlights.